whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabres and Sens tomorrow. It's a practice day for Buffalo today before departing for Canada's capital. And Marty Baron has some clerical work to be done the top today.
Please, thank you for reminding me. Yes, absolutely butchered the end of the show yesterday with my shootouts references. So, yes. So, Duffer.
Or Will. Was it Will or Garth?
It was Guard Butcher. Yeah, it was definitely Guard Butcher the show yesterday. Okay, I said that Linus Omark had never taken a shootout attempt for the Sabres. That's not true. He took two of them. He was 0 for 2, though. Never scored a goal. So that's this. And I said
I honestly
only
don't remember him playing for
exactly. Him. So that probably many people did not notice the error.
I remember made on this the one. Departure, the I'm out of here, I'm not reporting to Rochester kind
yes.
of thing. Yeah, but
okay,
yeah.
And that's one. And two, there is way more than two players that have failed to score in the shootouts with the Buffalo Sabres in their time. There's actually given an attempt. Yeah, there's plenty that never scored a goal, but never were given an attempt. There's 25 players that went 0-4 at least one in shootouts in Sabres history. Yes. Pat Coletta is one of them. Yes, surprisingly, there's guys like Chris Drury, J.P. Dumont on that list that I thought Tim Kennedy was on that list. I would have thought, hey, TK's got good hands, would have scored. You know, so there is some names on that list. But
Drury
yes, there's
never scored a shootout goal for Buffalo?
No, he went 0 for 2.
Okay. Yeah.
He actually went 3-for-15 in his career.
Well, I remember the Rangers having a whole gaggle, if you will, of star players that were not very good in shootouts. So,
and his three goals are game deciding goals, probably because he didn't go in the first three; he went later. Right?
Can you run through the other 24 on the list just real quick, so people aren't left wondering?
Okay, Clark MacArthur went 0-for-7.
I don't need the numbers. Just tell us who never scored.
I'm going to tell you the ones with the most, right? Like Kalaposo and Clark MacArthur both went 0-for-7. That's the most. After that, it's Evander Kane, Marcus Foligno, Dylan Cousins, Chris Drury, Matt D'Agostini, Linus Omark, J.P. Dumont, Adam Mayer, Jordan Leopold, Pat Coletta, Benoit Pouliot, Vladimir Sobotka, Tim Kennedy, Chris Stewart, Paul Byron, Luke Adam, Marcus Johansson, Phil Veroni, Jeff Skinner, Taylor Hall, Corey Koniker, Jimmy Vesey and Evan Rodriguez. Those are the 25.
Where did Skinner go?
What's that?
What did Skinner go in Buffalo?
0-for-1. He was there for 34 games that they went to a shootout.
Yes,
and
I know.
He went
0-for-1.
But
he only got one chance. Yeah.
Only got one chance.
Well, mostly because Jack took the leadoff spot and we got better at it. Because Jack would often score, and obviously Linus Ullmark became very good on the heels of Robin Lehner not being very good. So,
can I offer you something funny? There's five guys that went 1-for-1, 100% 1-for-1 in their career. These are going to be hard to come by, but yes, five guys.
You just go ahead.
R2, D2, Ruotsalainen.
Yes.
Like he went 1-for-1. Mm-hmm. Tony Lundman went 1-for-1, mm-hmm. better than Chris Drury. Tony Lundman, way better skills than Chris Drury. So Rasmus Ristolainen went 1-for-1.
That was in Anaheim.
Anders Bjork went 1-for-1. And Dominic Cahoon went 1-for-1.
Anders Bjork was... call up the box score on that. That was a stunning night for Bjork. He might have had the third period tying goal and a multi-point game before getting the shootout winner, and maybe was it against Boston?
You know what? If you, like, I'm trying to see Bjork, two goals, shootout winner, lead Sabres over Islanders, 4-3 win.
Okay. Yeah.
But the fact that you remember that it's not
a case of remembering. It's a case of over-researching for dumb things that you and I talk about. So at some point in the last year, I think I messaged producer Jeff right away, like, Does anybody remember this game? And then, you know, so then it tends to stick with you. So
Cody Eakin also scored for the Sabres that night, who rallied to blast the Islanders for the second straight night. Victor Olofsson had two assists. That's like how you get Google searches.
COVID season, that's why, right? Because they're playing them on back-to-back nights.
Yeah, I think it was later in the year.
Well, what year was it? 21?
Man, okay, let me go back now because I just lost it.
It had to have been.
May 4, 2021. You're absolutely right.
So it was the end of the shortened COVID season. No one's in the building. This is why nobody remembers any of it, right?
Yep.
Like it's not, you know. It's,
it is a blur. It is definitely, it was crazy. Butchered. It was butchered at that time.
Okay, well, we'll try not to butcher the rest of it. We've got about 50 minutes to go, which will include the Great Dane as the two-time defending NLL champ Buffalo Bandits, who are off to a torrid 3-0 start, are hosting the Toronto Rock on Friday. And this is, I don't want to say a trap game, but the Rock have been terrible. They are injury depleted. They are not what they used to be. So Buffalo needs to stay in the exact place they've been, which has been rolling their opponents 15-7, 18-7, and 13-6.
I think that is going to be the same type of game.
By the way, Duffer.
I want it to be like a 15-6.
So I've been spreading misinformation off air while diligently trying to research the accuracy of some National Lacrosse League records. So there was a crazy game over the weekend in San Diego. Ottawa did not score for the final 37 minutes of the game. They had a 5-4 lead in the second quarter. The third quarter starts, San Diego scores twice in the first minute and a half. There were no goals the rest of the way. The game ended 6-5, which tied an NLL record for fewest goals in a game, 11. Yes. The previous 11 had been a 7-4 game. So this is the lowest winning score, 6 for the home side.
Yeah.
And 5. So Buffalo actually had a 7-6 game in San Diego recently that they won in overtime. But this all kind of, our discussion started with, has there ever been a shutout? And I was like, I don't think so. So I wanted to tell you, Marty, the fewest goals any team has ever scored is 2.
Okay.
So we've not even had a 1 standalone.
We're not at a 1, definitely have not had a shutout.
Correct.
But 2. 2 is like the shutout. If you give up less, 2 or less, it's basically get a trophy, get a banner.
Oh man, there was some, it was actually a pretty cool trip into the history books last night in the National Lacrosse League. There were so many times Buffalo scored more than 20 goals back in the day. It was just the norm. It was like
the amount of times that Buffalo scored more than 5 or 6 goals in a quarter has happened. Imagine that neither team gets any goals past the second minute of the third quarter for the rest of the game in a 1-goal game.
And by
that
the way,
is not good.
The game ended with Ottawa hitting the post with half a second left to tie it. Like it was very fitting. Anyway, it's Buffalo, Toronto. Hot ticket, man. The Bandit land is like pretty full for the whole year. So this is awesome. Get in while you can. And we'll talk to
some Sabres fans at the game on Monday. Are like, Marty, you're going to be there Friday for the Bandits because you guys don't have anything Friday night. And like, not this Friday. I got something else going on, but I'm going to get to a couple of games this year. And yeah, so, there's a lot of Bandits fans at Sabres games and vice versa, and they love the atmosphere, and it's awesome. If you haven't been, try to find a ticket. Like, this is going to be a fun night Friday.
Bandits.com/tickets, Native American Heritage Night this Friday as the Rock are in. So, Sabres practicing without Yuri Kulik, and Tyson Kozak is up. So,
no Kulik, no Malenstein, and no Greenway, obviously, who has been out for a while. Right. But Malenstein has been ill the last few days. That's why he didn't play last game. So Kozak is coming up and really playing the center position, right? We talked about Quinn getting elevated in the third line role in the second half of the game after Kulik was injured against Washington. And I felt like Jack Quinn played well. Lindy Ruff mentioned on the morning show on GR today how he likes how Jack Quinn's game is turning around. We talked about his impact on the power play, especially on zone entries And I think that that has been building now for Jack Quinn. So he's with Krebs and Benson.
But he did start the last game on the fourth line.
He did start the last game on the fourth line, but on the first power play, which is like the difference is, I think Lindy Ruff was looking at his top nine and saying exactly what I said yesterday is, it's kind of like a game of numbers right now for Jack Quinn is where does he fit? But if Jack Quinn was playing at his best, he wouldn't be on the fourth line. You'd fit him on the top nine, maybe even the top six. But he's getting there. And now with Benson and Krebs, I hope that he continues to build maybe a different type of game. But given the opportunity on the power play to shine with his skill, I think that's going to work.
So what impact effect does the Jiří injury have right now on this group?
Well, I think it impacts the middle of the ice. Now that you've moved Tage Thompson to the wing, Cousins is in the middle of the ice. You have McLeod playing higher in the lines in the middle of the ice. And then Krebs, who had been playing some wings at time or fourth line center, now is your third line center. I think it affects the middle of the ice. It's different if you have on paper Thompson, Cousins, McLeod in the middle of the ice, or even Thompson, Cousins, Kulik, or Cousins, McLeod, Kulik. I think it's different than if all of a sudden you have Cousins, McLeod, Krebs, and Kozak, right? So I think it affects the middle of the ice. But I don't think Lindy Ruff is worried about that, and I'm not so worried about it because I have liked Tage Thompson on the wing. In the games that he's played on the wing now, in three games since moving to the wing, he's got a goals, three assists, and he's got 15 shots on goal in those three games. He had 15 shots in the previous 10 games playing in the middle of the ice, and now on the right wing, he's got 15 and three. I think it has changed Tage's approach a little bit with Cousins and Zucker. So I think on paper, maybe it looks not as good, but on the ice, I don't think it affects them as much, you know, where the middle of the ice is. It's just, it's unfortunate because Jiří Kulik, I feel like, is learning this year and now is going to have to, you know, miss some time.
Sabres, Senators tomorrow in Ottawa after the Sens were bumped out of town because of the World Juniors. They played nine straight on the road. And it was capped last night by a loss in Detroit, a game which they had a lead in the third period. They ended up losing 3-2 in overtime on Pat Kane's winner. Ottawa is 1-4-1 in the last six. Obviously, we spent a fair amount of time yesterday talking about the fact that Linus Ullmark is dealing with a back injury. So how much pressure is that putting on the Ottawa crease? Well, Anton Forsberg, as we know, because he's been around a long time, is more than capable. He's just, you know, been hard-pressed to find a rhythm. I thought he looked excellent last night. I certainly wouldn't pin any of last night's game on goaltending. And ultimately, you know, the Red Wings were fortunate to get a power play in overtime and win the game, which, oh, by the way, is their fifth consecutive win under Todd McLellan. Talk to me after the next 10 games when his record regresses to the exact same level as Jim Montgomery and Joe Sacco and the coach bump disappears. Well, you smirk, shirk, whatever, but it'll happen. I don't expect Detroit to go 14 and 1.
Detroit's playing a little bit better. And
of course they're playing better. So did St. Louis and so did Boston.
Well, I don't
know
about Boston.
They are what they are. The roster is what it is.
Yeah, Boston is a bad team. Boston is bad. And I don't think that Joe Sacco is really, like, he started fine coach's bump. Jim Montgomery, St. Louis has had some moments, whatever, but I think that I really like Todd McLellan as a coach, and I think that the last four games, Detroit has played a little bit different. Now, you mentioned
They've won.
Five, I mean, yes, because, yeah, they lost the first one, and they didn't look good in the first one. But he got hired that day, like the morning skate, and boom, played a game. Now, you mentioned the power play goal by Patrick Kane. So the Detroit Red Wings win 3-2. There was an interesting thing that happened early in the game. Dylan Larkin scores on the power play to make it 1-0. Duffer, I've mentioned this to you many times, and I know we cannot review everything in the game, right? It's just the way that it happens. But Detroit was offside by about 4 feet, okay? It was literally like maybe three or two, but it was a big offside, enough to say, oh, that's offside in real time, and it should have been offside. Didn't get called. Detroit spent time in the offensive zone. Ottawa ices the puck, can't change. Detroit now gets a face-off, gets a chance. Penalties call in Ottawa. and then they scored on the power play. I'm not saying the offside was a direct effect on what happened, but it was the snowball effect. There should have been a whistle. Nothing happens. Then there's an icing. There's a penalty, and Detroit scores on. That's why, like, I still think that there's a human element to it, but, man, do linesmen have a job that they have to do, because that can lead to something 2 minutes down the road if you don't make the right call. And that was an obvious one, but it got missed.
Right, but it's every sport, and it's most notably baseball, because early in the count, a pitcher sets it up to get a guy out. And when he doesn't get the call on the third pitch, and then we're into a 7, 8, 9 pitch at bat, the only reason we're there is because somebody botched the call, right? Mm-hmm. So, I get it. Like, it's a super valid point.
I'm okay with it. I'm not saying you got to review that one or whatever, but I'm just saying there's a domino effect that we talk about it often.
Right.
Right? And that was the perfect example of that domino effect that happened on something that should have been blown and wasn't.
But baseball's going to be at the forefront of changing umpiring.
Yeah,
right?
Because of the automatic calls.
Yes. So that's why I'm bringing it up. It's like, the more we talk about, like, you can't help but wonder, like, how long down the road do we see some sort of change? But that's for another day, because we got a lot to get to here on this show. Saber-wise, is there anything else before you want to... the whole point was bringing up Detroit-Ottawa last night. So the Senators have 1 win in 6. There's a different wildcard team now that everyone is chasing. 4 straight days, we've seen wildcard 2 change in the East. But might I add, and we should have asked our terrific control room to do some graphic overlay like yesterday in development camp. So what really needs to happen here is, if you got your Telestrator out, you would cross out Boston entirely. They're not third in the Atlantic. They're not. They're wild card at best right now. Oh. They're going the wrong way. Obviously, Tampa's points percentage is way better than Boston at this point. So change your way of thinking. Look at the East as 2 teams that can reasonably be caught right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying from Buffalo's standpoint, obviously the Sabres have to believe that too. But if you're anybody that's chasing right now, you're not scared of Boston being barely over 500.
Nope.
And obviously Columbus just got in the driver's seat last night with a stirring come from behind multi-goal comeback in the third period to win it in a shootout in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, of course, gets a point again. Ottawa got a point. Montreal is crushing it by getting points lately. Detroit's won 5 in a row. Philadelphia squandered an opportunity. Rangers blew a 3-goal lead and a 4-3 lead before losing in overtime. So there was a lot of growth for wildcard chasing teams in the Eastern Conference last night. But allow me to
have a ton of extra points.
Allow me to have my daily confession.
The what?
What did I do last night that I mildly regret?
You didn't watch?
I turned the Columbus game off at 3-1 Pittsburgh because it was making me nauseous.
Yeah.
And half an hour later, I looked at my phone and saw, what?
Well, not only that, the guy that we've been talking about with Columbus is Voronkov, who now has 9 goals in his last 7 games. He had 7 and 6, scored twice yesterday. Fantilli got a power play goal. Columbus is a good offense, and they're fun to watch. And yes, they're in the second wild card. You talk about third place in the Atlantic. It's like, and Buffalo should be looking and saying, okay, 10 points back of Boston right now with 2 games in hand, and Boston is third. Okay, maybe you're looking more at Tampa. Tampa finally won 1. They had lost 4 in a row, I believe. But it's Detroit, it's Montreal, it's Ottawa, all looking at saying third place in the Atlantic is attainable. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, if they're looking at it and the Sabres are, 5 points back of Detroit, I think everybody in the Atlantic Division can look at saying, okay, Toronto and Florida are ahead, but everybody else could file right in there for third place.
Voronkov, by the way, is tied with Leon Draisaitl for most goals in the NHL since December the 1st, and it's not a one-man show. Kirill Marchenko has... It's hard to put into words the presence that this player has He absolutely, like, he's top 20 in league scoring. He is, it's remarkable. I think he's easily overlooked. He's just kind of bringing along. And let's not forget, like, Fantilli is starting to pick up the points, which is huge. Yep. Kent Johnson, outstanding. They're still missing Chinnikov. Monahan got hurt last night.
Yep.
So we'll await an update on him. But I can't say enough good things about Kirill Marchenko. Like, between he and Voronkov, you're talking about, you know, draft picks from 18 and 19 respectively, and it's game changing for the, and the one thing I wanted to stress was, we know that Columbus has been really good at home, not so much on the road, and it was only their fifth road win last night at Pittsburgh. The two players with the best numbers on the road, Marchenko and Voronkov.
Yeah.
Well, Werenski has amassed the bulk of his great season on home ice. And this is understandable, right? Matchups, blah, blah, blah. It's super impressive that Marchenko and Voronkov have the numbers that they have on the road.
They've been trending that way, right? And that's the thing. Like, you want to continue seeing growth in players and trending the right direction. So, you know, I know that we've talked about Thompson, and I feel like Tage Thompson now has a little bit of growth that he's done over the last few games, doing it in a wing in a different situation. Cousins playing top line minutes and top line matchups with Tage and with Jason Zucker. Uh-huh. I feel like Dylan has some learning to do, but he has looked better. Jack Quinn continues to grow. Paterka with, obviously, you know, breaking out of that slump that he was in, but in the way that he performed in the last game, there's growth that has to continue to happen. And if the Sabres are looking at Boston and Tampa and let's continue to build that, well, those players have to continue their growth. And that is where the steps are going to happen, not just individually, but as a team. And to me, that's the biggest thing now. I feel like there has been some growth over the last little bit. Lindy Ruff, once again, said this morning, like, when you come out of a 13-game winless streak, you should be better as a team. You should be better as a coach. You should be better as a player. Where can we continue to see the growth? And that's what the focus needs to be on with the players individually. Collectively, the results will come.
Sabres coming off the shootout win over Washington. Columbus shootout win at Pittsburgh last night was highlighted by Kent Johnson and Kirill Marchenko scoring the goals in the shootout. And just, again, ultra confident, super impressive. And by the way, Merzlikins was a game saver multiple times, late in regulation and in overtime, including a stunner on Crosby. So goes hand in hand. And then, you know, we obviously saw Luukkonen shut it down against Washington the other night. Mm-hmm. With Jiří out due to injury, he's listed as week to week. Malentine, this is not surprising. Because of his illness, he's not going to try. It's a one-off trip to Ottawa. No sense bringing him on it if he's not likely to play. Yep. So Malentine's not going to travel. And the interesting comment from Lindy here, and fill me in if I was unaware of this, but did he actually say that Thompson was not able to play center?
It's funny because
Ruff said with Kulik out and Thompson not able to play center. So I'm going to need the exact quote here. Like, obviously we've been assuming that maybe Tage not taking faceoffs and all the rest of it and playing on the wing, but this is interesting.
The exact
to
quote
me
from Lindy when talking to Jeremy and Joe this morning was,
no, it's just now.
I know what you're saying, but when they talked about Thompson and dealing with something, he said, I actually don't think it's affecting his game all that much. It's something that he will need to just deal with for a little bit, and everybody does. So I think that there's a little bit of both here that can be true, right? That it's not affecting him much for what he has to do, but maybe it's affecting him just enough that he can't play center right now, and that's why they've got him on the wing. So, you know, again, it could be as simple as, maybe he can't take faceoffs, and that's why he can't play center. But everything else is fine. What's that?
He did take a few last game. I'm just looking for the exact quote. That's all.
Yeah, no, we'll find it. But again, just
I think what we're seeing is
when he shoots 103 miles an hour, let me tell you, if that was a very big concern, he wouldn't be shooting 103. And actually, Lindy Ruff said, according to their own analytics, it wasn't 103, it was 109. But that's not puck tracking NHL. But still, when you're shooting that much and that hard, I think you're doing okay. Maybe just a little something that's keeping him from doing everything he would want to.
So what are they really up against tomorrow with Ottawa playing their first game in a month?
Ultimate trap game for the Ottawa Senators, right?
But they've got one win in six games. I don't think you're getting a rollover, we're back at home, lethargic effort from Ottawa.
No, and again, like some people would have thought that the game against the Washington Capitals was a trap game. The Sabres were out west. They used the day to travel back from Vegas, and then boom, they go out. They looked as good as they have over the last little bit here. So that
and Tampa whole, like, just did the same thing, losing everything out west, coming home and beating Carolina last night. So
beating
please park the stupid travel nonsense excuse. Well, it's a joke.
Because there is certain situations.
It's convenient when it's convenient. Let's put it that way.
I'll tell you this. There's times where I came back from out west, I felt like great. Great, great, great. And there's times where I came back from out west, I felt like crap.
Life, man. Every day, like we all live it.
It's fact of life. Some days you're going to feel good. Some days you don't feel good. That's facts of life. Sometimes it happens that you come back from a West Coast road trip and you don't have it. It happens. But I laugh because I said that's the ultimate trap game because Ottawa's been away for so long. But look, Ottawa, for me, and I know Anton Forsberg was good in the game yesterday. I still think you have to test that goalie with everything you've got. The backhand, right? Like, Shabbat had a good game offensively, but I still think you can take advantage of him defensively. Mm-hmm. Their third pair is not what you would expect it to be. So I think you have to test them offensively. You have to go after that defense. That's the challenge tomorrow. Their forward group is really good. Their forward group with the Ottawa Senators is really good. I even like an Adam Gaudette, who's like, who's this guy? He's played well this year.
He's ice cold.
But I like what he brings to the game. Like, and the performance and the production early in the season was, wow, above and beyond. But that line with Norris and Nick Cousins, I think, have something to give. And they'll probably play against Benson, Krebs, and Quinn. So you got to win that matchup. But I still think you can take advantage of that group of defense, and you have to get to Forsberg.
Great Danes coming up. Want to experience Sabres hockey from closer than ever before? You can do so now to enter to win four tickets to an upcoming game and a chance to watch pregame warmups from Marty's seat in the 200. No, it's from the penalty box. I'm sorry. Visit sabres.com/pregame to enter today. Dane Smith coming up on Sabres Live.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
More Sabre talk to come. KeyBank is alive with Bandit Land on Friday night. What a night it should be. Bandits in Toronto Rock. Dane Smith is with us, two-time defending NLL champion. Dane, great to see you again.
Yeah,
what's new? What's different with the Bandits so far this year on the heels of your two titles?
You know what? It's been a crazy year so far with playing every other weekend. It's been hard to kind of get in a rhythm. But like I said earlier, it means we're doing something right with the strength of schedule. We want to continue our success. We know it doesn't come easy, and so far so good. But we're lucky enough to play at home this weekend, and we're looking forward to continuing our momentum.
Now, we're definitely going to talk about you and your accomplishments and stats and what you're doing, but when you guys played last game and you're looking at the shot clock going up in the 60s against Matt Vince, and you're thinking, like, are you looking around saying, guys, let's play a little defense there? Even though the score was, you guys had it, but are you looking at it and say, let's not put so much on our goalie's shoulders early on like this?
Yeah, you know what's funny is I don't even look at the shots for or against, but I remember JT being like, hey, boys, like, turn the ball over so he can get the shot title. And, like, And after the game, Matt was so mad because he's like trying to let in the least amount of goals he possibly can. And he doesn't even know about the stat, like the whole breaking the stats and stuff like at the time. So he was so mad at like, I think it was Ian McKay who shot the ball at the end just so they can get the ball back. And I mean, he's an amazing goalie, obviously, and he deserves every record possible. And they're going to stand for a long time.
I love how JT's like, guys, turn the ball over so we can give up more shots. Like, that would not ever happen in a regular game.
No, that's just an old guy talking, the guy that doesn't understand the defense or the goaltending aspects of it. Because if you had a defensive coach, they would never let that happen. If you had a goalie coach, they would never let that happen. So I'm surprised it happened, but they made up after the game, and it's an incredible accomplishment.
Well, I'm glad we've dispelled the controversy there between coach and netminder. You'd hate to have that heading into this game. What is it like? Obviously, you and Josh are exactly where you've been the last couple of years, from a production standpoint, from a scoring and facilitating standpoint. But what is it that needs to be said about the rest of your offense and just how impactful they are? And might I add, spectacular. Like, Teoka's goals this year, including all three of his goals last week, are just like, they're off the charts. And yet we say this over and over again.
Yeah, you know what? There's no us without them. I truly mean that. My right side on that side, they just truly just try to get me open. And they know if they can get me open, I'm going to give them the ball. And I can't give enough credit to them. They mean so much to myself. And I know Josh would say the same thing. Again, it comes down to what are you willing to sacrifice for the betterment of the team, and understanding that when it is their turn, they're going to put the ball in the back of the net, and they're so good at that. I know that at the end of the day, I can score goals. Yes, I have throughout my career. But I know these guys can score just as good, if not better, than I can. So I'm trying to get them the ball as much as they, and they work so hard for me. It's the least I can do is kind of give back and try to get them the ball and get them the goals they deserve.
Now, this is, I believe, your 11th season in with the Buffalo Bandits. And I'm looking at, I talked to your coach, John Tavares, the other day, the day of the banner raising, and we're talking about goaltending in the NHL. And then I kind of brought it to goaltending in lacrosse, how goalies now have a little bit more equipment, but it's positioning, and it used to be a little bit more athletic, but they're very athletic. Like, we had this big conversation saying, like, what do you see now that's different than when you would face the goalies 10 years ago? Is there a big difference, or is every year just a small little change?
I think goalies are, every year it gets a little bit better. Goalies get, I think, do more research nowadays than they did. I don't know for sure by any means, but I watch what these guys put in. I know Matt Vince is one of a kind. He does a lot more than others, but it's crazy the work they put in, the film they do. I don't remember seeing that back then. And they're a lot bigger, and they understand that they have to be kind of fit as well to be able to move that well. So it's a combination of both. Each year it doesn't get any easier. That's for sure. I think they need to make the nets bigger or something, or the goalie smaller.
No. Because if they do that in lacrosse, they're going to say, oh, we got to do that in hockey too. That's going to be a mess. So, yes.
What are you up against this weekend in Toronto, a team that has been pretty decimated by injuries in their winless start?
Yeah, these are trap games. These are the team that's hungry. This is a team that's always given us a good game. And it's a rivalry that's probably the best in sports. So it's one of those things. We're looking forward to the challenge. I'm sure they'll get some guys back healthy, which is what we want. We want to play their best team. And we know it won't be easy. Again, we can't take them lightly. Just because they're 0-4 in the season doesn't mean anything. In this league, you know, anything can happen at any time. Any team can beat any team. And we have to show up. And luckily, we're at home in front of Banditland, so I'm excited for that.
How do you keep yourself ready, just because the schedule has been so weird? Like, do you do anything like on your own? Is there some sports science that you've developed over the years to just make sure you're at your peak every time you guys play?
Yeah, you know what? Scott Loeffler's done a great job of bringing in a lot of guys living in market. So we're able to work out together throughout the week, Monday through Thursday. And then we're able to get some shots up as well. So we're always kind of six in our hands, always competitive. Whether we have practice throughout the week or not, we're always communicating to each other and staying in touch. And it is tough, though. No matter what, you can't you can't do the things that you do in game and practice, but I think the coaches have done a great job at making sure we're focused.
How's the hat collection selling at New Era?
I think it's doing pretty well. DJ over there at New Era did an amazing job. He gave me, he was able to kind of bring my hat to light, and I'm so glad for that. It's pretty cool to see people in the stands from the home opener wearing a Great Dane hat. So it is pretty cool. I'm obviously wearing one right now, and we'll have to get you guys some for next time.
Yeah, no, and you mentioned that you were in the windows alongside somebody named Josh Allen at New Era. Like, did you get a lot of text message, a lot of pictures from bystanders that just walking by?
I did. You know what? It's pretty cool to be alongside, hopefully, next time up MVP. So anytime you can kind of be in the same area is a great like that. It's amazing. But yes, I got a lot of photos. I sent some over to my family as well, bragging a little bit. But the guys gave me a little bit of a hard time. But you know what? It's a once in a lifetime thing. And I'm so grateful for New Era bringing it to light.
Yeah, DJ and company, awesome folks over there. Dane, offhand, because we were talking stats earlier, what do you think your most shots on goal in a game are? I don't know the answer. I'm genuinely asking.
Most?
Yeah, most shots you've had in a game.
I would say I'd have to be in 2016 when I broke the record. I must have been shooting between 16 to 20 plus a night. Okay. Now I'm noticing I shoot probably like only six times a night, and it doesn't feel that way. Like I don't feel like, hey, I need to shoot more by any means, but I definitely could. I know last game JT came up to me at halftime, was like, you need to start shooting the ball. And I was like, I know. But I'm trying to help my teammates out and get them the looks they need. And at the end of the day, it's all about winning. So it doesn't matter if I shoot the ball or not, as long as we're putting up the numbers that we need to.
Well, Marty, the reason I bring this up is because during my deep dive into the NLL record book, the record for individual shots on goal in a game, Paul Gait once had 30 shots on goal in a game.
I feel like that's hard to do. How many goals did he have that night?
Oh. You had to ask. I didn't follow up.
It was not a 6-5 win, that's for sure.
Correct. Now, both Paul and Gary do hold the record. They've each had 10 goals in a game. So that I know. I don't know whether it happened the same night when he had 30 shots on goal. Dane, good luck on Friday. Thank you for this, and we'll see you in Banditland.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
There's Dane Smith, and of course, you can be there for Native American Heritage Night this Friday when the Rock come in. Visit bandits.com/tickets to purchase yours today. It's part of a run for the Bandits of home games, not only this Friday, but then Saturday the 18th versus Philly and Saturday, February 1st in a championship rematch versus Albany from a year ago. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Nice to chat with the great Dane, and looking forward to what will be a very, very noisy Banditland. Not unlike Sabres practice today. So nice to see that Lindy Ruff was replicating Banditland by bringing the music to 6-on-5 drill and creating a little bit of chaos.
It's kind of funny, Duffer, because I was there earlier meeting with a group from Narden that, you know, they're doing this week where they explore different fields and whatnot. And I'm, you know, answering questions and talking. All of a sudden, music is starting to get played. And that was before practice. I think they were testing the system to make sure that they could plug in, like, an iPhone or something to be able to play some music, right? So I was like, what's going on here before practice? So it comes to find out that Lindy wanted it a little louder, but it did the trick.
Yuri Kulik is out week to week, lower body injury. Tyson Kozak is up from Rochester. Sabres take on the Senators tomorrow. Some takeaways again from last night. What did you think of the and again, we don't have an injury update yet, but Connor Zary is a top three point producer for a very low scoring Calgary team. This looked like a catastrophic moment when he was hit knee on knee by Helison, who is anything but dirty. He's only had a few minor penalties in his young career, but Helison gets a 5-minute major in game misconduct for this.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate contact because Helison is trying to come across on Zary and make the hit. We've seen a lot of those knee hits where a player is leaning forward and it's more of a north-south collision and then the knee's tangled up, but you don't extend the knee. I felt like this one needed to take a better approach, needed to take a better angle. And when Zary went down, like he grabbed his leg right away, you could tell that he was in a lot of discomfort. And this is probably going to be devastating from the reaction. Did not return. And obviously, I don't have an update right now, but it looks like he may be out for a while because that was a big hit. And I didn't see yet a player safety putting out anything saying they would be supplemental discipline. Maybe they felt the 5-minute major was enough. But it was just a bad timing on the hit. Just a bad angle, bad timing.
Hurts to watch. Calgary is at LA tonight, Florida, Utah, Colorado, Chicago, Vancouver, Washington on a 4-game schedule. Last night was pretty busy. St. Louis lost again. They had a lead against Minnesota, but blew it 6-4. That was after down 2-0. The only reason I bring this up is like the Blues are just, they can't seem to gain any traction under Jim Montgomery. They're 10-7-3, which is fine, but it's not, you know, it's 10 wins, 10 losses. They've lost two in a row. They're 5-5-1 in the last 11. They're just rather ordinary. As far as other games, you know, you look at the Avalanche, the Vegas Golden Knights, they've won 9 out of 10, 13 of 15. Dallas, and they've won 5 in a row. Minnesota, Edmonton, LA have all won 4 in a row.
What's happening with the Rangers? And I'm saying that because, like, I know they don't have Shesterkin. Jonathan Quick is in, and Quick is looking for his 400th NHL win, but it has been a struggle with the Rangers. And when, yesterday we talked, I said, if you believe the Rangers are going to be a playoff team, then if you're the Sabres, you're looking at it and you're saying, okay, we're only 3 points behind the New York Rangers now, right? Like, we can try to stay afloat that way. But I don't know now that the Rangers can overcome what they've been in the last month. They've just not looked good at all. Panarin takes a penalty late. There was just, like, a lot of bad happening with the Rangers.
Yeah, 6-16-1, I think, or at 6-14-1. I would say this.
This was their first one where they lost and got a point.
Yeah, they're scoring more the last three games. But last night, the 3-0 lead disappeared and the 4-3 lead disappeared. I'm tempted to say they're actually starting to turn a corner right now, despite how bad last night would have felt with the overtime loss after having a 3-goal lead. But obviously the jury's going to remain out on that.
At least Lafreniere got a couple of goals, and you look at Lafreniere, he had 0 goals in 13, only 2 assists. So only 1 goal in 21. Like, he started the season 8 goals in 18, and then he followed it up with 1 in 21.
Yeah. So, as far as, you know, what's happening tonight, I think Vancouver, Washington, for two reasons. Is Ovi watch on a long-term hold now that Buffalo shut him down and he'll go into a quiet time? Or are all eyes on Vancouver at Washington based on everything that continues to surround the Canucks and rumors and all the rest of it?
Pettersson is a game-time decision tonight with the Vancouver Canucks. Kevin Lankinen will be in net, so still no Thatcher Demko. Mm-hmm. When it comes to Ovi, Ovi did not have a really good game against the Sabres, but he still had 2 or 3 moments in the game that he could have scored, right? That's what Alex Ovechkin will do. You're going to catch highlights from him saying, wow, look at this chance in overtime. Look at this chance. But you put the whole game together and you're like, did he have an impact in the game Monday night? No, but I think that's what he does. And I look at this game against Vancouver. I think Ovi gets a goal tonight. I think that would be something that I would sprinkle on if you were able to get good odds on Ovi getting an anytime goal tonight.
But who's more likely to be traded? Not Ovechkin, obviously. We're talking about Vancouver. Pettersson or Miller?
I think Pettersson. I think Miller is staying. I think they like Miller. I think that there's a rumor out there that, you know, the Rangers offered Zibanejad for Miller straight up and the Canucks said no. I think that just tells you right there. Like, they want him, they like him, and excuse me, he's a big part of their game. So I think Pettersson's more likely to be traded, but I think that's going to be hard to do anyway.
You know what else is hard to do?
Get rid of that cough that I've had for 2 weeks.
Somehow get through an hour when you wanted to talk about something brand new, and miraculously, we didn't talk about it. See you tomorrow.